if Gene turned this baby on. Any questions from the council regarding these state champions? Anything at all? Anyone from the audience? Mr. Singer.
Yeah, thank you.
Proud member of the American Legion.
Yes. And an Army veteran as well. Korean War veteran. Do you have an opportunity to compete on the college level? Are there means where you can provide, they will provide scholarships for the kinds of ability that you gentlemen have?
Yes. Various schools will actually come to events. Rose-Hulman, a big engineering school, has actually been to a couple events looking for shooters. Illinois State University, the Redbirds, their coach Joe Miller is actually very involved with our group. He's done a lot of coaching with us as well. He's always looking for new shooters. So there's lots of college opportunities. A lot of schools have various rifle teams. They look for a lot of small bore, which is 22 caliber, and air rifle mixtures.
Do they have any pistol individuals who involve in that category?
Yes, some colleges do have pistol, and there's actually pistol groups around Illinois. I know one, but I forget the name of it.
What caliber? What, 45?
He can have a pistol.
What, is it the 45 caliber? Automatic.
Everything is valid.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
All air rifles.
A lot of air rifles, and there's various non-school connected groups that do 22 pistol, like a Ruger 10, 22-45 style.
Yeah.
So.
So the service academies have teams also.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Anyone else from the council?
Gentlemen, here is a question out there.
I just wanted to comment that I believe that it's become an NCAA sport now.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, fully sanctioned.
Oh.
Yeah. That's great. And what's your team mascot?
A kid dad.
Don't really have one.
No, that was a trick question. I think you did have one.
The Froder Snipers.
Yeah.
We named in 98 after one of the military instructors at Marmion, Sergeant Major Walter Schroeder Jr.
Okay.
He's from, he resides in North Aurora right now.
He's a Korean War veteran himself, actually.
Well,
yeah, I think, I guess, not so much a mascot, but our emblem.
Right.
It's kind of a combination of the emblem we have on our sweater here, and we have sweatshirts that we wear under our outer shooting gear. It's a big gold cross sights, crosshairs. So.
And for those of you listening or watching or even here in the chamber, rifle shooting is not an IHSA sport, sanctioned sport, primarily because of liability reasons. But it is sponsored by other organizations which provide you gentlemen the opportunity to hone your skills, and you can't get much better than state champions, right? Unless, of course, Master Sergeant demands that next year you're national champion.
That's right.
Is that right? Cool. Gentlemen, I have a working microphone, and I'm going to ask Chaz to stand immediately to the left of that little flag there, and then Joe and Jeff and Luke next to him. Right here, big guys. Yeah, there you go, right there. You sure are a talkative one, aren't you? That's why you're good on the field, man. Now, is this thing in the way, guys? This is probably in the way, isn't it? Sorry about that. Chaz, I'm going to ask for your help here, big guy. Grab an end of this sucker. Now, ladies and gentlemen, when Geneva has a state champion, regardless of the sport, regardless of the discipline, we like to honor him or her or them in a very simple way. And obviously tonight we have the great privilege of recognizing Chaz, and we're delighted that Joe and Jeff and Luke have joined us. And you talk about putting pressure on your respective mayors. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a special gift that Chaz and his parents can take with them, and that soon you'll see dotted throughout our community. All set? Check that out, man.
Is that spelled correctly?
It was funny, I was talking to your parents over the weekend, and your mom said, Chaz who? And I thought, it's very strange. Very strange. But what else do you want to say, big guy?
It's all yours.
Chaz wants to thank everybody for watching tonight. Do you guys want to say anything?
Well, again, it's an honor to be up here and congratulated like this by the city of Geneva. Thank you again for recognizing us as, well, obviously other cities don't want to. Or
believe me, I'll call Shokin. Who's the mayor? Shut Sabanov.
Grand George.
Grand George?
Grand George.
Good.
Grand George.
Oh, he'll get a call tomorrow, too. They need to borrow some cash.
Again, we hope to work harder, even harder this year, and continue our success by winning state again and going back to nationals and taking on the title this year. Thanks again.
This is for you, Dick. Unless you want to stick around and wait for the rest of the meeting. You're free to go, guys. Really, you are. So I know how busy you guys are. So you can take that home, and when the cops come, you'll say, listen, man, I got that. It's all yours. Mr. and Mrs. Brennan, do you want to say anything?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you all for being here tonight. This is really special. We appreciate it. Pressure's on ourselves.
Thank you all very much for indulging. That is pretty cool, though, if you didn't realize that they actually do shoot in between heartbeats, which is wild stuff.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, you're welcome. Again, thank you, Mr. Singer. And I invited those gentlemen out to the Olympic Training Center if they should ever make it that way, so they could shoot in the training center facility as well in Colorado Springs.
Wow.
It's just fascinating. It's just
That'd
great.
Be neat.
Next time we'll bring the apple.
I'm in.
And the blindfolds.
And the blindfolds. Item, and I apologize in advance, I forgot my glasses, but item 3B is to consider a request from Geneva Lions Club to solicit donations in Geneva, October 9 and 10, 2009.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, second by Mr. Piper. Do we have any Lions with us tonight? God, we all have like $100 to give, too. Unbelievable. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Excellent. Wow. We got a big agenda. Item 3C, consider appeal of the Historic Preservation Commission denial of window replacements for Shodine Incorporated, the petitioner. Before we entertain a motion and a second, I'm going to invite Mr. Unch, our Director of Community Development, to step forward, which he has done. And prior to Mr. Unch's comments, I'm going to ask anyone on the council whether they need to either abstain and or recuse themselves.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm going to recuse myself. Thank you.
Okay. And by recusing yourself, we're going to ask the Alderman to not join us at the dais. So, like a turkey club and a large Diet Coke. That's true. Mr. Runch, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Good evening. You have in your packets the background information that was distributed last week to you regarding this appeal. And I know the applicant or petitioner is here, but I thought I would provide a few additional comments to you above and beyond what you have in your packets, because we've done some additional work on this. Shodine Incorporated would like to install aluminum-clad replacement windows at selected locations on four facades of the building at 3565 River Lane. The existing non-original windows are all wood windows that were installed about 20 to 25 years ago. There's a large amount of deterioration to those windows. Thus, the request from Shodine for aluminum-clad windows in an effort to deal with some of the maintenance problems that they've been having. The HPC has a window policy which basically says replace wood windows with wood windows on contributing buildings if a repair of those wood windows is not feasible. This particular building is rated as a potentially significant building in the city's historic buildings inventory and therefore is a contributing structure in the historic district. The staff recommended denial of the request at last month's Historic Preservation Commission meeting, consistent with the Commission's window policy that's been established, and the Commission did proceed with a denial. Staff has conducted some further investigation of the building, and we find that there are some distinguishing characteristics in the building that stand out in relation to other commercial buildings in the historic district that that we typically have. I should point out that this building is a Riverstone building. We really have only a small handful of remaining buildings in our historic district that are commercial buildings or old industrial buildings that are Riverstone buildings. These are some of the oldest buildings in the city and in the historic district. So we've got some distinguishing features that I'd like to further point out to you. It's not in your packet. The exterior walls of the building are vertical with no overhanging eave or gutter system control to prevent the sheeting action of rain against the rough-cut limestone walls. And we're talking about walls that are two stories, at least 25 feet tall, and they're sheer vertical walls. Some portions of the exterior facades of this building involve historic repair, where parging of the building has been done with a coat of material added to the stone in the interest of maintaining the integrity of the walls. So these are fragile buildings, and they have a history of being such. The exterior walls are at least 18 inches thick, which is certainly not typical construction by today's standards. What this does is it results in very deep windowsills and ledges associated with each of the windows. And with the windows and the door openings, we counted about 60 windows or door openings in this building. So we have a significant amount of window and door fenestration on these buildings. This condition promotes snow and ice buildup on these ledges and wood windowsills, which results in water permeating the sills and lower portions of the vertical portions of the frames. Evidence of repair is very significant. It gets to the point on some facades where virtually every other window shows evidence of portions of the frames being replaced and basically cut out and then an insert put in place to just eliminate the rotted material that was present prior. The irregular shapes of the window openings, again, because it was a very old industrial building and its method of construction was somewhat crude, certainly by today's standards, but these openings are pretty rough in terms of how you work with even a contemporary window product of 20 or 25 years ago. So the openings are irregular, and that creates opportunities for moisture to enter in around the edge of the replacement window. Also, there's deterioration of wall surfaces above the windows, because you've got tall two-story building and you've got lintels that are deteriorating above the windows and almost creating a situation where water is basically wicking its way back towards the wood portion of the window frame. I would just mention also that there are conditions present here that are fairly unique, again, for a Riverstone building in the city, and that this building is right on the river. And it's being hammered by the weather that affects the river valley in terms of winds and prevailing directions of storms and that type of thing. Also, just from the standpoint of, again, comparing our situation here in Geneva with 60 windows in this building, we're talking about, on an order of magnitude, many more windows than what a typical historic commercial building would have in the historic district. This is one of the older commercial buildings in the district, formerly a foundry, and we believe that while there may be an opportunity for an alternative approach to windows here, this is nonetheless an important building in Geneva's history. The Commission's policy for requiring wood windows when they're being replaced on a contributing building is a sound policy. The best solution would be to install storm windows over the wood windows rather than promote the use of clad windows. And certainly storm windows over wood windows provides that extra layer of protection that could probably help sustain or at least lengthen the life of replacement windows. However, given the unique conditions as I've outlined before you here this evening, staff is prepared to support the Schoedien appeal on the installation of clad windows on this building. However, it is important that the window frame dimensions, the profile, the sash width for the windows to be replaced be the same as the wood windows that will remain in each facade. And with that, I'm certainly open to questions. The petitioner can certainly speak to the situation as well. But I wanted to bring this new information to light because we did have a chance to take a second look at this building, and that is our staff position and recommendation to be considered this evening.
Questions from the committee. Alderman Bond and Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First question, do we have any evidence that the wood windows, which are deteriorating, are anything like the original wood windows in this building?
Well, I can tell you that those original windows, whenever they were installed, they were probably made scratch-built. They were probably made with old-growth wood, which was the custom back in the day, hardwoods. Today's manufactured wood products that are incorporated into windows, whether they're clad windows or all wood windows, the wood is new growth wood. And it has different durability qualities to it versus old growth wood that used to be the manner in which the type of material that were used typically by the folks that crafted these buildings years ago. So there were certainly wood windows present, and we have photographs to that effect.
but not necessarily similar to the wood windows that were put in recently?
Well, 20, 25 years ago, what we believe would be the case is that the wood windows would not be the same type of thing that was done originally in the building, but nonetheless would, yes.
A second question, are the aluminum clad windows they plan on putting in similar to the ones we put in this building, which is even more historically significant than that building?
I don't know if I can speak to that question. Maybe the petitioner can, but I will tell you that the newer portions of the development, that is where the newer buildings are located near this old building, certainly there are clad windows present in that structure. So, you know, historically what's been done, and I believe that when the windows were, the wood windows were installed, that predated the review authority of the Preservation Commission that we now have, you know, in terms of review of windows in the historic district. So at some point, 20, 25 years ago, it was determined by Chaudine or someone that wood windows would be installed in the older portions of the development of the Geneva on the Dam development.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Alderman Singer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Dick, is there the availability of the kind of window that needs to be replaced? Is that available on the market today?
Well, I can't speak specifically to what's available and not, although there are a number of companies that can provide windows for the openings that are here. In some cases, I'm sure they would have to be custom built, whether they're clad windows or all wood windows. But, I mean, that's what window companies that are in the window replacement business, that's what they do. They provide windows for your situation.
Okay. You've also indicated that there's a possibility of placing of storm windows as such, and would one be restricted to the style of storm window that would be inserted?
Well, storm window placement in the city or installation does not require a permit. The actual physical replacement window itself or work that's done on the window would require a building permit, but simply placing a storm window over an existing permanent window does not require a permit. But yes, it's a viable approach, certainly.
When you say it wouldn't require a permit, would it have to go? It wouldn't have to go through the historical preservation.
No, the commission would view and staff, for that matter, would view storm windows as a readily changeable item on the building. And so, and in as much as the building permit is not required for storm window placement and installation, that in and of itself does not trigger Historic Preservation Commission review because they only review permit requests.
Okay. Thank you, Dick. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome. Anyone else from the dais?
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I got into the packet just rather late this weekend and got confused as to whether you were talking about aluminum clad or vinyl clad windows. And I think now we've come
These
to
would
the
be aluminum clad.
Aluminum clad. And which is, I think, pretty maybe not universal, but it is used quite often in commercial buildings nowadays, aluminum clad, metal clad. I think vinyl clad is more of a residential usage.
Yeah, pretty much, although we've seen a lot of different things. But I would say that typically if we see clad windows in a commercial application, they're probably aluminum clad.
Yes. I would like to have the Historic Preservation Commission consider changing their opinion about the especially commercial buildings and change away from the requirement to have wood windows as replacement in a commercial building or in a building that is going to be used for a rental property. I think it's time to face up to the fact that this is 2010 and clad windows, whether it's aluminum or vinyl, have been around for 20 to 25 years or longer. I know I sold them myself when I was in the housing business in the 1970s. So, and they're still good. I have them in my own home on the vinyl clad. And they've been there for 22 years with no difficulties. I would not be able to say that probably if I'd had wood windows installed and some of my neighbors
sure.
Are having that bad experience. So I think that we need to take a look at this issue of clad windows and loosen up on it a little bit and make it easier for people to replace their wood windows if they've rotted out with windows that will last for a long, long time.
I certainly staff can look at that and bring forward information, and we can you know, get
that
into
that direction. Has not been granted yet. I'm certain it'll be visited in the not too distant future.
In response, I would like to say one thing, and that is that certainly there's a time and place for all wood windows, clad windows. What it really comes down to here in this case, because we're talking about the Geneva Historic District, and it really comes down to what this council.
But we're specifically talking tonight so that we don't.
Yeah, that's fine.
Don't take the 30,000 foot perspective.
Yeah,
we're talking about one building tonight. We're talking about the building on River Lane that has been appealed by the HPC. So I think it's only fair not only to the petitioner but to the staff as well that our comments be germane to that particular issue.
That's fine.
And then if at a later date we wish to bring the matter up regarding window replacement overall in the historic district, we could do so at a separate evening. So
that's fine.
Fine. Anyone else on the dais? Yeah. Comments regarding this particular petition? Mr. Marks.
I just want to clarify one thing. We want wood windows, but then we'll leave aluminum storm windows up in front of it?
Well, that's one approach.
Okay.
See, there, you know, we can talk at some length. There are all different types of windows,
yeah.
And there's a long list of manufacturers. We've done research on the warranties for the various mainline window companies that produce replacement windows. They all have all wood products. They have a number of clad products. The warranties range from anywhere from 10 years to 20 years on those products. There are some products that are incredibly durable products as all wood, unclad windows, because of the quality of the finishes that the companies put on the exposed wood or the exterior portions of the window. And obviously cost comes into play in all of those things, but suffice to say, we have numerous examples throughout the historic district where all wood windows have been successfully installed in commercial buildings. So this comes down to identifying, again, for another night, the broader topic of what level of historic integrity do we want, and authenticity do we want to retain in the historic district, and if the commission or the council wants to look at that, we can certainly do that.
But your presentation led me to believe that wood windows in that building would be very hard to maintain.
Well, I have not really looked at it in relation to the various types of wood windows that are out there. But as a general rule, if you replace the wood windows that are out there now, and I don't even know the brand or what was done, but 20 years ago, the wood windows were installed. If those same windows were reinstalled, in my opinion, and based on our work that we did on this, I really think we have a combination of circumstances on this particular building that pose a real challenge in terms of keeping those windows intact.
Yeah, I walked around and tried to view the building yesterday and noticed that, you know, if those were only up 20 or 25 years, they've taken pretty much a beating.
The building is, in my mind, the building is being hammered by the elements.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the nature of its construction, the lack of eaves and protection is having a devastating effect.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else on the dais before I... Mr. Brown?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Follow-up question.
Sure.
First, point I'd like to make is there seems to be rather illogical that one can put a metal screen, a metal storm window in front of a wood window, and that the HPC is unmoving on wood windows. I believe it's correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the reason they do not make any exceptions for replacing wood windows with wood windows is because that is the national code. And the only exception built into the HPC code, in some sense, is the petitioner has the right to come to the council and ask the council to overrule. But otherwise, the HPC really has nothing within their code that allows them to to, if you wish, disagree with the national code. Is that correct?
Well, I think that's a way of, let me restate it. I think I understand what you're saying. The City Council has adopted the U.S. Secretary of Interior standards for historic rehabilitation. As a part of that, the authenticity of historic structures is covered in those Secretary of Interior standards, one of them being maintaining authentic building materials on the exterior of buildings. And so the HPC does feel compelled to evaluate these petitions as they come forward based on the Secretary of Interior standards that this council has adopted.
Well, then I would suggest that the petitioner put in metal windows with a metal storm window on the outside of it so they can claim the metal window is no longer on the outside. Now, the whole thing makes no sense, but there is no provision within our present ordinances or code for the HPC for them to make exceptions in certain cases. They are bound by the code. Is that the,
well,
it sounds to me,
I mean,
that's
these
the way
are
they
standards
treat
that are being, these are standards that have been adopted.
Do they ever make exceptions to them? Do they have a provision for making exceptions?
The commission treats each case individually when it considers them, when they meet on these cases, and so certainly they have the ability to deviate, but at the same time, they're acting with the charge that's been given them by the council, and the council has adopted these standards.
And the council also adopted the ability to overrule.
That's correct.
Yes. I plan on voting to allow the petitioner to put in metal windows, as we have done in City Hall. I think City Hall still looks wonderfully traditional. We haven't altered the basic historic appearance of City Hall by changing the windows. Thank you.
Alderman Piper.
No, I asked and answered.
Okay, Alderman Pollack.
I agree with Alderman Brown. And I agree, Mr. Runch, that just allowing the petitioner to put in aluminum or slash vinyl clad, whichever the correct terminology is. I think, however, what we're doing is we're going down a very slippery slope, because we're going to have every business in the historic district that has wood windows is going to want to replace it, and they're going to turn to us and use this as an example. I think it's incumbent upon us to do something much sooner than later and correct this once and for all. Thank you.
Anyone else on the dais? Mr. Maladra.
Yeah, I'm not sure what we're correcting. We have a policy that calls for replacement, like for like, except in situations where that's not possible. I think that Dick outlined a whole set of circumstances here that make this a unique situation that our own policy says replace with something else. I don't see any need to correct anything. By following the policy that we have, this petitioner is able to replace the wood windows with aluminum clad windows. That's it.
From the dais.
Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Singer.
Thank you. Dick, is this something that becomes cost prohibitive? Is that becoming an issue here?
Prohibitive
in the sense is that this is something, if we go in the direction of what is normally our standards that we follow, would that become more expensive for the petitioner than if one would replace them with the clads? Or
Actually, I think in some cases you would, probably in most cases, you'd find that the clad windows would be more expensive than the wood windows. But I think that there is a little bit of a cost-benefit equation that comes into play here, and simply long-term maintenance. And I haven't spoken to Bob, but I suspect that given the amount of repair work that's been done on the wood windows and walking around the building, there is evidence of fairly meticulous repair that's had to have been performed to cut out rotted portions of window frames and replace with new wood framing. That is just a maintenance hassle,
mm-hmm.
And to stay on it is definitely and in defense of wood windows, properly maintained wood windows, or maybe meticulously maintained wood windows, can last 50, 60, 70 years. That was one of the comments from one of the manufacturers that we got some information on. So it really does come down to what's practical in terms of the maintenance of the windows. And this particular building stands out. We've got 60 windows in this building, 60 windows or doors in this building. So it's quite a significant undertaking to keep them intact.
Thank you, Mr. Inch. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I have not yet, but I certainly will. If the petitioner has anything they'd like to add, the floor is yours. Otherwise, I'll entertain questions or comments from the community that's joining us.
You ready for a motion?
I yield.
Okay. Anyone from the community? Questions or comments regarding the discussion thus far? Then I'll entertain a motion. Seeing none, hearing none, I will entertain a motion. And just for the record, the motion should read that we are
approving the appeal. Affirming.
Yeah.
Or affirming.
Uphold.
Approving the denial of window replacement.
No.
No, we approve. No. Yeah, we accept
affirm the appeal.
Affirm the appeal, exactly. So
approving the appeal.
Yeah, so whoever wants to make that motion.
I'll make that motion, Mr. Mayor. Approving the appeal of the Historic Preservation Commission, denial of window replacements in buildings at 65 and 35 South River Lane.
Seconded by Mr. Piper.
Yes.
So an affirmative vote is to support the appeal by the petitioner. A no vote, in essence, sustains the vote by the HPC. Any other questions or comments before we take a roll call? Madam Recording Secretary.
Alderman Brown?
Aye.
Alderman Dantino?
Aye.
Alderman Hill?
Aye.
Alderman Maladra?
Aye.
Alderman Marks?
Aye.
Alderman Palak?
Aye.
Alderman Piper?
Aye.
Alderman Singer?
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously, 8-0. This matter will be considered on the consent agenda on September 21st, Monday evening, 7 p.m. in this same council chamber. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And let the record show that Alderman Vogelsberg is late. Let the record show that she returns to action.
Scary.
Item 3D, review and consider site plan approval for a 32,000 square foot research and development building and associated site improvements on 10 acres located along the west side of Couch Road, north of Illinois Route 38, otherwise known as Roquette America LLC.
So moved.
Wow. We'll give that one to Vogelsberg and seconded by Singer. Is there any additional information the staff would like to present other than what's already included in our packets? Is there any information that the petitioner would like to present that's otherwise included in our packets? Any questions from the dais for any of those aforesaid distinguished people? I think the word distinguished kind of threw him off there. We have a motion. We have a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes unanimously. This, too, will be considered on the consent agenda on Monday evening, September 21 at 7 p.m. Thanks, guys. Everyone knows Dominique in the back, hanging out there. How are you? Good, good. Welcome back. Item 3E is to consider draft... Oops, excuse me. Nope. Item 3E is to consider draft ordinance and incentive agreement providing property tax abatement incentive for Roquette America.
So move.
Second.
Motion by Singer, seconded by Hill. Questions for Ms. Ellen DeVito, our Economic Development Director. Mr. Marks.
Yeah, I just had one question. I mean, we do this, and I understand that this is now the nature of the beast of getting new businesses into town, but have we ever considered, and I guess this isn't for this, but it's one of those new council members' questions that I finally get to ask, is have we ever considered tying this to maintaining a certain number of employees? at the premises, because, you know, we regain some of this by them using, you know,
right,
the restaurants, the other services in town, and it seems like we're giving up the real estate taxes, which I understand, but I'm not saying that we have to say all the number that they propose as the employees, people have to be there all the time, but a percentage of that having to stay employed. I mean, is there a reason we don't do that? Is it a...
Well, actually, I think you'll be surprised by the response Ellen provides. So, I know I will be.
I have seen that done in the past. In this instance, I really believe the city's goal was the more involved with the real estate. We have to correct our equalized assessed value, and the goal here is to bring more industrial commercial property online and to further extend our utilities to help us bring more even further down the line. In regards to the creation of the jobs, Roquette is going to be pressed to do that because they have an agreement with the state of Illinois for an EDGE tax credit, and they have to reach a certain amount of jobs, so they will not forfeit the credit. So regardless of the jobs created, I will say when they first came to us, they discussed 15 jobs, and they're now at 25 and about to hire some more already. They've been advertising. I had a visit from their HR director recently. But our main goal here was the property tax creation. And, you know, Roquette has stated they intend to be here for quite a long time. They're planning a very elaborate campus and recruitment of other businesses of like sort, which is good news for the city of Geneva. Mm-hmm. And it strengthens all the food manufacturing that we already have in town, you know, Millard included, which refrigerates the food before it goes on out. But regardless if Roquette stays or not, the building will be in place and it will be taxed, and so we've met our goal of property tax creation.
But is that something we can look at in the future as people come? I mean, it seems like the state has ties a credit to it. We should probably look at the same way.
If the council would like to, I don't know that the employment is the true goal. Every town has different goals. I think for us right now, taking care of our property tax and our utility issues out there outweighed the job creation. So...
That's fine. Thank you.
Alderman Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just for the public consumption and the TV crowd, they will immediately start paying taxes to the other districts, school district, library district, park board, etc., as soon as the building is completed and assessed.
Mm-hmm.
So even though we are making some money available to help them build the building, they will be contributing to the city immediately.
That's a good point. We should restate for everyone at home, this is a partial abatement. It's of the city portion only, and it's 100% the first year.
You said it would be interesting.
Going to 90, 80, 70, 60. It's a 10-year abatement, decreasing, and the other taxing bodies will receive their taxes in full. So... And if I may also, this is a draft agreement because we have a few documents. We still need to get a copy of the lease, just a few more details to be taken care of. It'll be what we think October 5th that it'll be on the next council agenda.
We certainly welcome them to town.
Oh, yeah, welcome.
No question.
Yes, no question.
And they just announced earlier they're going to be the proud sponsor of the Marmion Rifle.
Awesome.
Or a rifle team, as they would say in the...
I'll bring the apples next time.
That's right. Any other questions for Ms. DeVita?
I have a comment.
Alderman Hill?
I just would like to congratulate the mayor and Administrator McKittrick and Mrs. DeVita for the efforts, the successful efforts in bringing Roquette to our community and continuing to help them so that they improve the utilization of our property and improve our overall tax base. Thank you very much and congratulations.
Thank you. It should be noted that, of course, Mary's predecessor, Phil Page, was instrumental as well.
That's right.
In fact, Phil gave a presentation in fluent French.
I'll do that next year.
Thanks for laughing, Dominique.
I was going to say, while I ended up working on this, actually my third week here, a lot of the work...
Yeah, what took so long, by the way?
A lot of work had been done prior, and Dick Unsch led that effort, I believe. Pete Collins, Gene, everyone helped with the presentation. It was a team effort, so...
Okay. Any other questions for Ms. DeVita? Any questions for the petitioner, Dominique? You're the only petitioner that we call by its first name. Isn't that great? If nothing, we do have a motion. We do have a second. All in favor of the motion as presented, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed, say nay. Any abstentions? Again, this will also be considered Monday evening the 21st under the consent agenda. So 7 p.m. Mr. Philip Chuck, good to see you. Oh, excuse me, October 5, John. October 5, yeah. Yeah, sorry, excuse me. You're free to join the rifle team. Ladies and gentlemen, item 3F is to present review of city leaf collection services by our Director of Public Works, Mr. Dan Dinges. And it should be noted that following... We'll get to that. There's a lot more work to be done at the presentation, so stay focused. This will be exciting.
Mr. Mayor, I have to leave at 8:15. I'd like to say that...
Do you want to recuse yourself? You don't have trees in the yard or something?
It doesn't look like I wasn't getting my way and I left it off.
Now that you mention it, it's too late.
Do you have a note?
Vogelsberg motion to plant silk ficus uptown.
Thank you, Mayor and Committee. Steve Lemire is actually under the weather, so he's not joining us today. I don't think he came. He actually went home today during the day. What I'd like to try to accomplish today is kind of give an update of our program and get into what this coming fall, which is quickly approaching, is going to bring. Some of this information will be familiar or should be. We presented some of the same information back in February, March timeframe. Program began in 1991. Population was approximately 14,500. We had 153 curb line miles, 12 field staff members, and collected approximately 5,200 cubic yards from 1991 to 97. Last year's program, population roughly 23,500. We've got 244 curb line miles and 13 field staff members, and 6,200 cubic yards of leaves were collected. The past 2 years, if you recall, we've had some struggles with the leaves and Mother Nature cooperating with us. We've got the last 2 years, hopefully this year will be a little different, but if you remember, winter starts right around December 1 with a nice snow and doesn't stop until February, March, which makes it very difficult if there still are leaves remaining, which is why we implemented a program last year where we collect from the middle of October through the end of November, and come December 1st, we want to be ready to start moving snow. So that's the program we have in place. We've got, with our Allied Waste contract, we incorporated a free leaf bagging program in the month of December. So any leaves that remain, residents can put those leaves out with their garbage without a sticker, and Allied will pick those up. This year's program. It will be in-house. We've got three crews consisting of one truck, the same truck that does the snow removal, a leaf machine, and four men per crew. All three crews are used to complete each zone in 1 week. We've got three zones. We pick up the town two times each. So that's a 6-week program. That's why we start in the middle of October and run through the end of November. And you can see we've got roughly 7,200 households, and it's tight getting in those 6 weeks because, of course, we've got Thanksgiving that last week typically where we only have 3 days, and that makes it really tough for that zone to try to get that done, and we are not utilizing overtime. It's not intended to pick up all the leaves. We're just there to get as much as we can when we're there.
Could you please say that again louder for the camera?
Preferred by saying it never was intended.
That's right, why we turn off the lights so nobody can see us.
Louder for the
listeners. Can I trouble to turn on one more set of lights? Because I feel like I'm speaking to some sort of spiritual God knows what. Apparently, we use the batteries out of this thing to put it in the microphone. There we go.
As it was mentioned,
oh, hey, Dan.
The program never was intended to pick up every leaf. We're just out there to get as much as we can when the time is available, and that's during that six-week period. We realize that not all the leaves come down in October. We're at the mercy of Mother Nature on when the leaves drop, and 2 years ago, they didn't drop till almost the end of November, which really made it difficult. So we can only do as much as we can. Once the snow comes, our priority is to be able to keep the streets clear so that everybody can still get to work and be able to get around town. We do have, as I mentioned before, and I'll get into the map, we are making some revisions on the zoning to try to balance it better. But we have zones A, B, and C, and we rotate who's first every year to try to balance it out so that not someone's always not first and someone's not always last. There's pros and cons of being first and last in depending on how the weather cooperates or doesn't cooperate. This year's schedule, Zone A will be the first pickup. That will start.
That's gone.
Yes. Zone A is the east side of the river.
Yeah, you can leave now.
Oh, you too, Ralph.
It'll start the week of October 19th for the first pickup. Residents in that zone need to have their leaves out by 7 a.m. Monday morning. And then, because we cannot, once we've gone through that street, we can't come back because we've got too much to get done to be backtracking. So we got to keep moving forward. That's why we ask everybody to get out Monday morning, and then all the leaves should be out at that point. We can collect the leaves. Their second pickup will be the week of November 9th, which you can see that the leaves haven't dropped. There's going to be leaves remaining in the trees after that pickup. That's why that free bag program is important for those residents to utilize that program.
Excuse me, Dan, you said get the leaves out. What does that mean? On the parkway, on the sidewalks, in the streets, or in the trunks of their cars?
I'll get to that, but it's along the curb, not in the street, along the back of the curb.
You are so promoted, were you?
Didn't you watch the
park
video?
Oh, that's...
Tom Hanks wasn't so bold.
Zone B, which is the west side of the river, north of Route 38, and this is one of the zones that changed. Previously, Zone B used to be everything north of 38 west of the river. That zone was fairly small, and Zone C, which was west of the river and everything south of 38, was big. And as those younger neighborhoods are growing, we're getting more material, we needed to balance it out. So what we've done now is we've taken Route 38, and I've got a map that'll show this. Route 38, Caneville, Kesslinger. Everything north of those roads will be in Zone B. Everything south will be in Zone C. Zone B's first pickup will be the week of October 26th, second pickup week of November 16th. Then Zone C will be, its first pickup will be the week of November 2nd, and second pickup week of November 23rd. Here's the map showing the new zone designations. You can see Zone A is everything east of the river. Zone B is the Route 38, Caneville, Kesslinger, and everything north. And then you've got everything south of those same roads. From what we can tell, this is going to be new for us, so we're going to be trying to keep track of everything. But we feel that just better balances the zones, and hopefully we can stay on that one-week cycle. Common mistakes made by residents when they're placing leaves. Residents place their leaves out after crews have already picked up on their street, and that's what I was talking about before. If they get them out on Wednesday and we've already been by that street, they missed their pickup. We're not going to be back until their second pickup.
And let me state for the record, you would certainly appreciate that those pleas and begging and, oh, but I forgot because, you know, after all, there was a replay of American Idol on and I couldn't get the leaves out. We ain't coming back.
In order to stay on track, we need to just keep moving.
No favors will be granted in 2009 relief program.
That's correct.
Okay. Except for...
So 7 a.m. Monday morning, the week of their pickup, they need to be out. The other residents place leaves in street rather than along the curb in the grass. This becomes an issue when we get a nice rainstorm in October, November, because those leaves plug the inlets and we end up having flooding, and it does happen. We can't have leaves in the street. We will not pick up leaves that are placed in the street. What we are going to try to do this year is have someone ahead of the crew putting door tags on residents' doors saying, you need to relocate your leaves to the parkway. Your leaves will not be picked up. And hopefully they will get them in the parkway before we get there.
If they don't do that, you're going to bypass their house?
We will be bypassing their house.
Why is that?
It doesn't make it.
Well, we've gone around and around. And we have a rule to keep people from putting it in the street because it floods the road out. If we pick them up anyway, which we have been doing, people continue to put them out into the street.
But if you leave them there, it floods the road out. So why don't you just pick them up and ticket the people for putting them there?
We can do that too. I'm open for suggestions. We're trying to figure out the best way to do it. We can just go ahead and find people.
Well, I mean, you don't want them to put them in the street because it floods the road out, but you'll leave them in the street there for your flooding the road out. So that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Well, I agree, but we would just like people to follow the rules and put them in the parkway in the first place, and then it doesn't happen. But we have people that put them in the street, and if we can make that fine high enough and we follow through with that fine, I'm all for it.
Is it currently an ordinance violation?
It is.
I mean, could they get an old ticket for it anyway?
We can.
So who has to give that? The police department?
No. The crews can actually issue that old ticket.
Well, that becomes a... Do we want our crews wasting time doing that?
You don't.
Which means they're not picking up leaves.
Then if someone decides to challenge it, then the crew has to go out to court, and the people will claim that the leaves blow into the gutter, which they do. I'd like to make the point that the residents of the city are actually helping the city and helping the crews if they take those leaves, which naturally fall into the street, and rake them up onto their parkway. That's the problem. There's always some in the street just because natural.
Oh, sure.
They fall in the road, and the cars blow them into the... And I do it myself. I rake them out of the street onto my pile. And so you will get people challenging this. And remember, you don't want these crews going out to the courthouse instead of picking up leaves.
Well, that's true, but I think the problem isn't that some leaves blow in the gutter. The problem is
some people literally do. Absolutely.
Year, they're putting the entire pile out.
Right, I understand, but there will be some people who will challenge it.
I understand, but I think there's some semblance of common sense with the crew. They're going to know what was in the gutter and what's 3 feet out into the street and feet deep.
It's apparent because the traveling lane gets very narrow as people put those piles. There's like a one-lane road at that point unless you're going to drive through a pile.
Yeah. And then they start getting chewed up by car tires, and then they really plug up the sewer.
Really becomes a mess.
Is there any opportunity for the air rifle team to do this?
What about cars in the street?
Could you pick up the car?
It difficult for you to go around even and pick the leaves.
That's another issue that we have. Putting leaves next to obstacles. Cars would be one.
Yeah.
And sometimes we have to deal with that in the downtown area because there's cars that park on the street. Our crews will take that and they'll make sure that they get back there. But the other obstacles is people like to pile it around their mailbox. There's basketball hoops that are in like cul-de-sacs and stuff like that. They pile it around. It's hard, and you'll see in the video, this equipment is hard to maneuver around. And when you put mailboxes and everything else, it just slows the whole process down, which prevents us from getting through collecting all those leaves. So we'd like it in the open area, in the parkways, so that we can pick those leaves up as quickly as possible and continue on track with our program.
To get back to this point about the actually finding people, I think it would be, even though it is indeed today under our current ordinances an ordinance violation, I think the city council would have to take a positive position and vote again to ask Public Works to start fining for this particular ordinance violation. I don't think it would be wise for us to start doing it without giving the public a second warning that we're about to do it in egregious cases, which is, I think, what Alderman Hill and I are referring to. There are cases that are just obviously egregious. A person has taken every single leaf on their property and put it in the street. And those are just, I agree with Sam.
Which we can do, but I don't believe it's a second warning. It's got to be about a 50th warning, because I know we've had this discussion many times, and every year there's
discussions. We've never told people we're going to start fining them. Yeah.
We've told them what the rules are. I don't think we need to tell them we're going to fine them. This is what the rule is.
What is our ordinance violation fine at the moment? Does anyone remember?
$25, I think.
$10.
Have we established the amount for it?
Well, let's get through the, let's get through the entire presentation, and then we can fine each other for...
Okay, I'm not positive about that. I also wasn't recommending a fine necessarily. I was just saying that it seems to me to be counterproductive to try and change their behavior by leaving the leaves laying in the street, thereby contributing to the problem that we're trying to avoid. That, to me, was the main point of what I was saying.
I agree.
Whether we fine people or how we can approach the change of behavior, we can figure that out. I think electric shock therapy works.
Some of the different things that we've talked about to try to improve our communications, which this would be one of them. We have it scheduled to go in the utility bills. We are going to have signs on the machines. The leaf machines showing the schedule. We've got barricades similar to, if you're familiar with our hydrant flushing program, where we put barricades out saying hydrant flushing happening in this area. We're going to do the same thing that leaf collection is happening in this area. So at those like entryways into the different zones, kind of a reminder for those residents, get your leaves out. City website has all the information on there, and we'll continue to update that information as we go. Geneva Mail, which is that weekly email that goes out to several residents. We'll send out Twitter messages, and then we've got a video that I worked with at Geneva High School, Cheryl Klein. I'd like to, unfortunately, they weren't able to make it. It's my fault because I didn't get them the message until late, so I apologize for that. But the Geneva High School students and Cheryl worked very hard. I also have Alderman Hill and his wife, Steve LaMare and the crews all worked on this, and I think it worked out pretty well.
This will be submitted to the Cannes Film Festival, sure. Or Cannes. Dawn, do you want to sneak up?
Well, once I see, after I have a good laugh at Sam.
This is what keeps me up at night, watching this thing about 1 a.m.
I think this is an indie movie. It ought to be submitted to
a true indie movie.
Yes.
Every autumn, the ground of Geneva becomes littered with piles of leaves. Beautiful as they can be, these leaves can actually cause problems.
The leaves aren't collected. The piles of leaves along in the grass can damage the grass. The big issue that we deal with are the leaves end up plugging the storm grates and end up flooding out the roads. So we want to keep those grates clear.
Luckily, the Department of Geneva is prepared.
The city created this program to assist with the disposal of leaves and the collection of leaves for the residents of this community. Probably one of the most important things about this program is to make sure that everyone follows the instructions and the requirements and the time schedule and the schedule to ensure that we can collect all the leaves as quickly and as safely as possible.
For anyone concerned with the process of packing leaves, Mrs. Dew is here to show you how. After raking up all the leaves on your lawn, place them neatly in bags and stack them by the curb. If you don't have any paper bags, neat piles about 12 inches behind the curb do just as well. Do not simply rake your leaves into the street. This could cause street flooding by obstructing the flow of stormwater runoff. Also, make sure no obstacles are blocking the leaf pickup machines from access to your leaves. And make sure leaves and only leaves are in your piles or boxes. Place your leaves on the curb no later than 7 a.m. on the Monday the week of your scheduled pickup. that's all there is to it. If you have any further questions, feel free to visit the website at geneva.il.us. Click on the Public Works Department link and then the leaf pickup link.
That's him.
Neat.
So we plan on putting that on Channel 10. Information for the residents. Hopefully they'll be able to see that and follow the rules a little bit. With that, I've opened up to any questions or comments.
Questions from Mr. Dinges regarding the 2009 LEAF program? From the dais, seeing none, hearing none. Anyone from the audience?
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Oh, okay.
The current program in which we have a second collection and residents are required to bag leaves, place them with refuge, and there's no sticker required. There's some confusion about that. I'm sure you're aware of it, Dan, as to some wondering when we can do this without the sticker and how come I couldn't do it before and now when can I do it again, and is there going to be some clarification in that regards?
Yeah. The program is set up, it's four leaves only. So right now you cannot do it for your yard waste or anything like that. It's only four leaves and it's for the month of December. Now they will pick that, which is Zone A, this year. The first pickup will start in that area a week earlier, a week into the last week of November. But it's really set up for the month of December. Mm-hmm. So what residents can do, if they're in Zone A and they have their second pickup and they still have leaves after that pickup, they can rake on those nice days in November. They can rake, put those leaves in bags, and just put them on the side of the house or whatever. Just get them onto the side so you have them ready to go, and then put them out at the curb, and Allied will pick them up. No sticker required.
And what date will that begin?
That'll be the month of December.
The month of December.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Pollack?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm going to wait till the next action item on the agenda. But thanks, Dan.
Okay.
There are only going to be two leaf pickups per every zone this year. That's it.
That's
no matter
correct.
What, it's only two.
Right. What we used to do when we had winters that didn't start until the end of December, and I think residents got used to it, is we would go through and do it. It was always a two-pickup program. But if we had time in December and there were still leaves out there, which there typically are, we would, if there wasn't snow and our guys were available, we would go out and pick up a third time, try to get through town. We kind of shot ourselves in the foot because the residents got used to that. Now we've had 2 years in a row now where the snow starts December 1st and continues for the next several months. We don't have that opportunity to get out and pick up leaves, which now we pick up leaves in March and April. So it is truly a two-pickup program, and then we've got the bag program in December.
There is no action on this item. It's simply a presentation so that we all are reminded of what the program will be like this fall. Anyone in the audience wish to comment or has any questions about the 2009 fall leaf program? If not, we'll move on to item 3G. Oh, there you go. Consider bid award for a new leaf machine or outsourcing of leaf pickup program for next fiscal year. Just to clarify, this is next fiscal year that we're considering outsourcing the program. Yeah.
Fall 2010.
Fall of 2010. So although it reads 2009. Okay. Dan, you want to make a presentation or you want to entertain a motion first? Since it is a COW meeting, we can be casual. Whatever you guys want to do.
I think we should have the presentation since the...
There you go.
The
presentation.
Stated 3G is not actually a motion. It's a choice.
Indeed it is.
Right.
Dan, all yours.
essentially this came into play. We have in the current fiscal year a new leaf machine that's in the budget. We have three machines that we use. We do have one of the older machines that we've held on to as a backup. So if one of those three that we rely on goes down, we have the old one that can help us through for a few days to keep things going, because we are on such a tight time frame. We need to replace one of those three machines and get rid of the oldest machine so that we can continue. And it really messes around with our schedule. If one of those machines goes down, now we only have two crews being able to pick up leaves. Alderman Marks raised a question as far as, since we are looking at a leaf machine, now would be the time to look at the possibility of outsourcing. So what I've tried to summarize in this memo is what our current program consists of, which I just went through in the previous agenda item, and outsourcing. You'll recall that we discussed this back in February, March. And what we've done is kind of gone through the numbers again, made sure we still are not aware of any other contractor doing it other than the one, so we received a proposal from them. And just the highlights as far as what the difference is between in-house and outsourcing. You can see in the first table that I have up here, the current program, it's a two pickup program, zones A, B, C, similar. Outsourcing, the benefit of outsourcing in this case is it's three pickups, and their window of picking up is smaller. They start the last week of October and run to like that first week of December. They collect each zone three times. And what I'd like to point out is if you look at the schedules, if you look at zone A, for our current program is October 19th and November 9th, those 2 weeks. If you look at outsourcing zone A, you got October 26th, November 6th, and November 19th. So you can see that that last pickup, the week of November 19th, is critical. I mean, that by then, usually the majority of the leaves are down. So that first zone, which now, like this current year, would be November 9th, they would have a pickup the week of November 19th. That's the big difference that I see with the outsourcing. A lot more a pickup later in the season where you can get the majority of those leaves.
Could I ask a question? So as far as weather-related issues are concerned, one issue is that the leaves fall in time. So this has that one covered. The other issue is the snow comes early. What do the outsourcers do if it snows?
They will be in the same situation. They're going to have to still try to get them leaves. If it gets buried in 10 inches of leaves, it's going to slow them down. They might have to wait until some of that snow gets,
but they'll
be responsible to get them. That's the one thing. It's not a foolproof if you outsource it. You're still at the mercy of Mother Nature, and if you do have that situation where they still have leaves to pick up and you get hit with a big snowstorm, well, there's still going to be leaves on the ground.
And then your trucks throw snow on top of the leaves.
Exactly.
And they have a
exactly. And then if they're if the leaves were placed in the street, now they got pushed into the yard, and then the residents really yell at us.
And covered with snow.
So that's one of the big advantages. Some of the other things, when you start looking at the dollar and cents behind it, like I said, we've got $42,000 budgeted in this year for a new leaf machine. We did receive quotes on that, and that's the item. The other item, depending on which way the committee and city council chooses to go, but we have $42,000 budgeted. We've got estimates on our current machines that we have that we would no longer need that we could sell. We estimate that at about $48,000 worth of equipment. So we've got roughly $90,000 that can be applied to the program to help control costs in an outsourced scenario. So what I've tried to do is show you that in this table below. One thing to note on our current program, there's going to be added costs in the future, whether we like it or not. As Fisher Farms and those younger developments mature, there's going to be more leaves to deal with. We're going to have to increase Right now, we have a hard time managing with the three crews that we have. The only way I see making that better when those areas mature is adding more people, adding more time. We're going to have to do something to be able to pick up the leaves in the time period that we have available. The other thing to keep in mind is our leaf disposal at Prairie Green. Right now, Prairie Green is not fully developed. We hope through funding and grants and all that, that we continue to restore that to the prairie that we want it to ultimately become. What we've done is we've set aside roughly 60 plus acres in the far northwest corner that will remain agricultural, where we can dispose of, where we can dispose of those leaves on a continual basis, so we don't have to pay for the disposal to a landfill or to some haul it to some other farm field. So in order to get the leaves to that site, we need to build a roadway essentially out to that area. And I have a map just to get there so I can show you what I'm talking about. Now, this might be hard to see.
Well, Dan, if you outsource this, how would they be removing the leaves?
They, based on the information, we got prices on both. Whether we use our site that we have, you can see here, the far upper left-hand corner in red, that's the area that's been designated for agricultural and leaf disposal. In order to get there, we have to be able to build a road out to this area where the leaves would be dumped, and then the farmer would spread them on these fields. So we need to build a road that gets from Peck Road out to that site. What we propose to do is use, there's bike trails proposed throughout that area, and you can see this could be a bike trail, or this will be a future bike trail at some point. We built one earlier this year. What we would look at doing is beefing that bike trail up to be able to accommodate the trucks. That's estimated, that cost, we actually had it in a budget a year or two ago, is in the neighborhood of $100,000. So that dollar is going to be needed at some point. So those are some of the costs with our existing program that we're going to see in the future. Right now I've been using the out years 2013-2014 just to compare it. Don't really know when the budget's going to be available and when the grants become available to fully develop Prairie Green. I'm just throwing those numbers out there. It could be 5, it could be 10 years. I don't know. I'm just guessing at this point.
Where did the company dump their leaves? If they don't use us?
If they don't use us, they would haul it to their own site and dispose of it on their own. It's their responsibility at that point. They'll probably mulch it. And
they have a private contract with some farmer.
Right. They would deal with it on their own.
What would the cost difference be?
Well, let me get up here. Back to this.
Helping the gun.
Age.
$71,000.
Can you see that? No. There you go. That better? Not really.
We have it in the packet. We can see it.
Okay. Well, for everybody else. What you can see, what I've done is our current program is roughly $110,000. In the proposal that we received from the contractor, you can see you've got option number two, outsourcing the program, contractor collects only, and then city disposes. We have a cost. We pay a farmer to basically spread those leaves on that site that I just showed you. That's estimated at about $20,000. So you can see average monthly cost $1.75 versus the $1.26 in our current program. So it's roughly 48 cents or just under $6 a month or a year. It's 48 cents a month or $6 a year. And then I've run those numbers out based on, it's a 5-year contract that we would be looking at for the outsourcing, and we've got those escalators in there from the contractor. What I also show in here, applying the equipment credits, we had $90,000, and there's several different scenarios on how you would want to play with those, applying those funds. But what I've done is done 20, 20, 20, 20, 10, kind of spread out that savings. That money would be in the account, in the refuse fund, but you could apply it this way, and there's, you could apply it all at once too. But just trying to spread and level out the fee increase that would be necessary. And then option three is the contractor taking the leaves with them. You can see that it actually is cheaper for the city to have him take the leaves with them. In option two, it's $1.75 in year 2010 versus $1.73. And then as you go down, you can see that it's cheaper. So if we were going to outsource, I would recommend that we just have him take the leaves with them. Then we don't have to build. We don't have to build the trail, which option two doesn't even show that in there, but it really should, because if you're going to have him dispose the leaves on our site, you have to build the trail. I probably should have shown that in there. I don't have that. So I definitely, if we're going to outsource, definitely recommend that let him collect them and take them with him. Then we can throw, 60 acres could go back to Prairie Green, and whether it becomes agricultural or remains agricultural, there will be needs for our sludge at the wastewater treatment plant. That could be a site where we could dispose of sludge. There's a lot of flexibility involved if we don't have to worry about the leaves being deposited there. So basically what it comes down to is outsourcing versus the current program. There are going to be costs, and you can see in this 1A, that's where I reflected $50,000 for year 2013 and $50,000 in year 14, thinking that that trail would be spread over 2 years. It could be all done in 1 year, but you can see how it jumps. So when you look at that, it's $1.92, $1.94 per month, versus when you look at option three, $1.86 to $2. You're getting right there equal, and this isn't even reflecting the requirement of when Fisher Farms develops, has trees and that. We still have to face that fact that come 5-10 years from now, we're going to have to do something with additional people or additional hours to be able to cover the zones that we have. So basically, if you look at option three versus the current program, you can see that it's right around 50 cents a month, which I think is what we talked about back in February, March, 50 cents a month or $6 a year to be able to outsource the program.
I would make a motion to approve that.
Dan, is that in addition to what the fee is presently?
That is in addition to the current fee.
Okay.
$3.59.
Yeah, what is
that? That includes brush as well.
Oh, yeah.
This is just we're just talking about the leaf. The brush will continue. I mean, that program is currently outsourced, and we would, assuming we continue in that program, we would be looking for contractors to give us proposals. I don't remember when that contract expires, but it would be the same type of thing if we outsourced the leaf program.
Before anyone entertains a motion, I'll direct the council that on page 90 of your packet, there's a recommended language for such a motion. But before I entertain such a motion, I'd like to turn the floor over to Alderman Marks. Believe it or not, I actually promised Alderman Marks to let him speak first, but that went over like a pregnant pole vaulter. No disrespect to the pregnant pole vaulting team, of course.
90?
Oh, 90?
No,
90, yeah.
Yeah, 90 has it. Originally what happened is when I found out that we were budgeting to purchase this equipment this year for the leaf collection, I actually talked to Dan, and I don't know if everybody realizes this, but Dan, correct me if I'm wrong, that the current fees that we collect do not really cover the program, because it does not cover the purchase of the equipment that we have. That comes out more out of the capital budget, is that correct?
Right.
And you anticipate, actually, with the growth and the replacement of the machines, that we could probably be looking at every other year retiring or purchasing a new machine. which, if you spread that out over the 35,000, we're probably undercharging the current residents over the 7,200 houses 25 cents a year already. We're really taking out of our normal operating budget and capital and spending it to buy this equipment that we really don't use for anything else other than this leaf collection, pretty much. And so at that point, I really had to wonder and sit back and think of, for $6 a year, which means, and to be guaranteed, three pickups if we outsource it, and they will actually dispose of it rather than, you know, doing it through Allied, which ends up in a landfill, they're probably pretty much going to dispose it, more of a green way of doing it, that it was, and if you use at least 15 bags, I mean, five bags cost about $2. I went around this weekend and looked. If you use 15 bags, it's pretty much a break even then for the city residents to actually pay the extra 50 cents a month to just have that third pickup. And I think that's some of the areas that we need to look at as we look at this. I mean, we are not going to be able to keep up with the leaf pickup as it currently stands, as, you know, Randall Square, Sunset Prairie, and Fisher Farms start to mature, which is starting to come up sooner and sooner. And what's nice with when we're looking at Kramer is the pickups will be a little later in the season, which means we'll get all the leaves and we'll get that third pickup, because they will guarantee three pickups to get all those leaves up. And especially in the time when we're cutting back on other major improvements in the city, I really think we've got to start using our staff to make sure that all the cracks are filled, that the potholes are taken care of before we start plowing the snow. And I don't look at 50 cents a month as being an outrageous amount.
Right. You got a good point that I haven't made. If our crew, if this were to be outsourced, it frees up the street crew, which is basically shut down. Any activity is shut down during a six-week period because they're all focused on leaves. If they're not picking up leaves, they can continue with the pavement patching program, tree trimming program, all those activities that otherwise stop.
Right. And we have had extremely, no complaints I remember of, except very good news with Kramer for picking up all the brush.
They have done an excellent job.
And we're not opposed to trying to find out if there's another company to bid against. We just haven't been able to find
it. Right.
Correct. Last time this discussion came up, it was in the heat of a political campaign for people, and it was also right after all the leaves weren't picked up and buried in the snow. And so I'd rather have a take a look at this before we get into the heat of that. You know, all my leaves didn't get picked up. And again, we're just too late this year, because Kramer, to do it this year, needed to know by August 1st, and we just couldn't get all the numbers together by August 1st. So, you know, I'm really sitting back and looking at this and making sure that our staff can be used in other ways. I really think we ought to consider strongly about outsourcing this, because in my mind, city government is here to take care of police, fire protection, streets, you know, sewer and water, not picking up leaves. That's it for my comments, Mayor.
Mr. Piper had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Rich, thanks for bringing this up again. We discussed this at length a year ago, and quite frankly, this made sense a year ago, and I believe what kept us from doing this was the survey that was sent out. Was a big argument against this. Unfortunately, I still say there's way too many advantages to doing this to ignore it. I absolutely echo what Rich says. Let's have your guys do what they've got to do with the tree trimming and the potholes. And I believe it's going to be less maintenance on our trucks, isn't it? Because don't these guys spend about a day flipping these things from leaves to snow?
Right.
So I think there's a lot of hidden costs, a lot of soft costs that we're going to save long term. You're right. There's going to be more and more leaves. We're not going to keep up, and boy, no good deed goes unpunished. You had that third pickup for a couple of years, and people get used to it, and that's the end of that. So I think we should just outsource it and get out of the leaf business.
That third pickup is a major plus.
Oh, it's huge.
It really is.
It's huge.
It really is.
Mr. Maladra?
I think the survey was a part of it, but the survey just reflected a small percentage of the email that I got on the subject. I went through it over the weekend because I knew this topic was going to come up, and The vast majority of the email that I received was against raising cost. It was a don't tax me anymore type of position. I think what we didn't realize at the time we discussed it before were a couple of things. First, as Rich said, the current program just doesn't pay for itself. Okay, although the people in Fisher Farms today are paying into it every month, if we have to increase staff and or hours and or equipment to pick up their leaves when the neighborhood matures, we're going to also have to increase the cost at that point. I think the matter of actually replacing this equipment on a rotating basis, that cost is passed on to the resident, not through a line item on your utility bill, but it's reflected in our capital budget. So I think that given that we are facing a cost issue no matter how we approach it, the best value for the money is the outsourcing. It gets more pickups in, although it doesn't solve the problem if the leaves get buried by the snow. We don't have to deal with building a road out at Prairie Green. I agree with you there. I think that having them take it away is the best idea going. It's also greener, as Rich pointed out. So given that we are facing the reality of having to increase cost regardless, I think this is the best value we can find.
From the dais, any other comments? Mr. Hill? I'd be happy to entertain a motion. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak?
Comment, Mr. Mayor?
Mr. Brown, comment?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I presume they use similar equipment to what you do. Seen the operation in St. Charles?
Yes, similar type. Theirs isn't a fully enclosed. Ours is a fully enclosed vacuum system. Same type of thing, except they've got, they're a landscape company, so in tree service, they've got a lot of dump trucks, and they're not using them during this period. So what they've figured out is that, hey, we could keep our guys busy and use our dump trucks. Basically, they have a machine that detaches, you know, and vacuums up the leaves and throws them into the back of the dump truck, essentially.
So what this means, I guess the point of my question was, our people will not have to learn anything new. The service will look similar, almost identical.
Correct.
To the present.
It'll have the same.
Our rules will be the same.
Right.
The second point is, are these basically the same crews that are doing the brush pickup?
Same, yeah.
And we've had very little complaint, is that correct?
I have not received hardly any complaints, and when we do, we address it with Kramer, and it is immediately taken care of. They've been very responsive.
So even though we can't get a set of legitimate bids this year, probably because they're the only people in the future, it's quite possible this will open up to more companies getting involved,
right,
and more bidding.
That's
opportunities.
The whole, right.
It sounds somewhat persuasive because of the fact that we haven't been doing our accounting carefully over the years and keeping track. I can believe that, as you say, they're reusing trucks, which are simpler trucks than the ones we're using. We're using very large trucks that are meant for snow plowing to pull very large vacuum machines. And I can believe they possibly, their labor costs might be slightly lower than ours, which is not necessarily good. But it would seem to me that it does make sense, and if we did our accounting right, this thing is close to a break-even. So, and given the, there's all sorts of other hidden costs, like the amount of time city employees have to spend on the phone and aldermen have to spend on the phone with irate constituents, I think for me that swings it, and I would agree that if we can get a reasonable deal for outsourcing, it seems to me that's the smart way to go.
Thank you.
Mr. Dantino.
Will the people still have the same option in December? Because I think, if I look at this right, the last pickup is December 1st. If there's still leaves,
yes,
they haven't picked up by, is it Allied or whatever?
It's part of the Allied contract, so as long as we have that Allied contract, it'll be there.
So they would have the same for people. So if the leaves fall after December 1st, the problem is still the same.
Right. Well, Kramer is proposing, you know, they're estimating it'll take them about 3 days per zone.
Right.
Because they'll have more guys on and they've got that last pickup would be like the last week of November. They actually have a couple days into December.
Yeah,
so they'll be picking up, they'll finish the three collections, period. Once they're done with that third collection, though, then if there are leaves that people didn't get out, then they would have to bag it. And that option will still be available like it is right now.
Thank you.
And the reason they won't go any later than the December 3rd is for the same reason we can't, which is...
They're trying to avoid the snow. It's going to slow them down.
It's unlikely to go much past their beyond anyway.
Okay. Right. The fact that they're starting later, they won't have, at least the theory is, if the leaves fall, they won't have as many leaves to deal with as they continue, because they're going to be... In November, they're going to have essentially all three pickups. So when they're that third pickup, there should be less leaves to pick up. But right now, we only have two pickups, so we're picking up a lot more leaves at that. During that second pickup is very heavy when we're out.
Thank you.
Before I entertain a motion, again, anyone in the audience, any questions or comments? Then I'm going to turn the floor over to Mary McKittrick so that she can elucidate us all on what and how that motion should be stated.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. excuse me, if I might make a couple of suggestions. Number one, that excuse me, that we leave the motion more general to reflect that staff's recommendation is to move forward or advance the outsourcing recommendation with both collection and disposal in fiscal year 2010-11, because we will need to come back with an actual contract for approval. And at that time, the rate will be reflected in there. But I would like to leave it more general, focus on the fiscal year, and then in a separate motion to reject those bids on the leaf machine.
Do we have to reject the bids today? Since, for some reason, if the negotiation fell through, we would not want to go through a second bidding process.
No, we don't have to do that today. We can carry that over on the agenda to be maintained on an agenda until the council so desires to address that. But we do need to respond to the bidders at some point formally.
I understand, but I was only asking whether there was a legal requirement to reject them immediately.
No,
I don't think so.
Make some sense to sit on them for a week or two.
Sure.
Mary, does it make any sense to post something on the website to see if there's any other vendors out there to bid against?
I think that that's a great idea. You know, obviously, we staff can continue looking for those entities that might exist out there that we haven't been able to find. But yes, we can post something inviting proposals from any company that would like to submit something to us.
So if there's someone who would like to entertain a motion as described by Mrs. McKittrick, Alderman Hill.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to make a motion the City of Geneva outsource leaf collection and disposal of those leaves commencing in the fall of 2010 for the fiscal year of 2010-11.
Second.
Period.
Does that motion also include the immediate cessation of those commercials being run?
So we'll never have to see that again.
You have to do that this year.
They actually would still apply because they still have to place their leaves out at the curb.
Selling autographs to help pay for the leaf collection.
Identify which is the old bag.
That was Ray Polnick, third ward. We have a motion and a second by Piper. Any additional questions or comments regarding the motion as presented? All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed, say nay. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Unless there's some delay, Dan, we'll consider this under consent on the 21st, but you'll have a contract back probably. You think we'll have a contract back that quickly?
Probably. Well, it depends on how long we want to open it up for others to respond. That's the question.
Okay. You know, yeah, why don't we shoot it to October 5 and see what happens?
Okay. I'd like to see if we can at least get somebody else to respond.
October 5, you're comfortable with?
I think I'm fine.
Okay. Thank you, Dan. Item 3H is consider local agency agreement with the Illinois Department of Transportation for federal participation Phase 3 Keeneville Road improvements via the Federal Stimulus Fund project.
Yeah. Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by Marks. Questions or comments?
I might ask who chooses the roads in this case? Were these chosen by the Kane County, the state? I might have chosen another road to give
a choice.
Well,
I think being a truck route certainly helps. Right?
Who chooses the roads? City staff went out and evaluated. We have federal aid routes, FAU routes, so we're restricted to those. Keeneville is one of those. South Street, a portion of South Street, Western Avenue, Anderson Boulevard, those different, and we looked at all the FAU routes in the city, and this was top on the list for qualifications. They look at the traffic volume and all those things, and this one ranked the highest. So as far as us being able to get funding, that was our best road.
I just wanted to make sure that city staff did have input.
Yes, we did. Yes, it was all city staff, actually.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Anyone else? Questions for Mr. Dinges? We'll see those beautiful signs posted along Keeneville Road with the... We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. Item 3I, consider request to waive bidding process and authorization to retain the professional services of RK Promotions. This is why I'm reading so slow. I can barely see these words. Okay. Thank you. RK Promotion and Advertising as in an amount not to exceed $3,000 for the purchase of a tourism advertising.
Good.
Thank you. I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
To waive the bids. Brown makes the motion.
Second.
Seconded by Piper. Questions or comments for Ms. DeVita? Hearing none, seeing none. All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone oppose? Item J, consider bid award to ESG Safety in the amount of $26,129 for purchase of 11 sets of protective clothing for the fire department.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Motion by Brown, seconded by Marks. Questions or comments for the chief?
Does this include a bulletproof vest for the chief? Or?
You know something we don't know? All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Good God, Sam. Item K, consider draft ordinance amending Title 1, Chapter 8, by adding Section 1-8-9 of the Geneva City Code. This applies to non-sufficient funds return check issues.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Brown motions. Marks makes a second. Any questions or comments for... What's that famous rock star who wears these kind of glasses?
Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly, yes. Mr. Brown.
Elton John.
I guess this is a question for Ms. Dawkins. Essentially, what is the change here between compared to present practice?
The only present practice isn't in writing, so there's no, we do this, but there's no actual formal written policy. And since we are charging a fee, it needs to be a council policy. And the fee that we're charging is merely to cover our costs. It's what the bank charges us along with staff time.
So it's just housekeeping?
It's housekeeping.
Thank you.
Right. And there was a, on TV tonight, there was a long segment about how banks are charging for overdraft. So I think this amount, $25, if it covers what the bank is charging us, that's fine.
Well, and you'll note in there it does say right now it's $25, which currently does cover those costs, but should we have greater costs by the bank, it allows us that flexibility to charge, to pass those costs on as well.
So this is almost a housekeeping issue then. Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. Any additional questions or comments? All in favor of the motion, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Elvis Costello will now read item 3L. Consider renewal of group health dental vision insurance policies.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second.
Brown makes the motion and Marks makes the second. Any questions for Ms. Dawkins? Mr. Polak.
Thank you, Mayor. Stephanie, a couple questions. It's a 13.1% increase or whatever the amount was there. Can you tell us exactly what the cost is to the employee?
Okay. It's a 1.2% recommended increase. I don't know where you're 13.
I thought it was cumulative.
We're looking at from this current year's premiums an increase of 1.2% to the medical. So to the employee, depending upon what plan they're on, the greatest increase would be $1.36 for somebody on the family PPO plan per pay period. For the medical only.
For the medical only. Okay. Oh, I see.
Yeah, last year was a 13.92% increase.
Okay.
This year the recommendation is a 1.2%. We do also have Dan Walter from Lundstrom Insurance, who's here also, who's our broker who assisted in this process. Just a couple comments, if I may.
Yeah, Dan has assisted us for years, in fact. Good guy.
And he does a great
job. My God, you sat here through all this?
I warned him.
I'm surprised he's not going to raise the rate right now.
And we did send out proposals to other carriers besides Blue Cross Blue Shield, Aetna, Humana, and United Healthcare, and all three declined to rate us because they could not be competitive with Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Dan, what's the environment like out there?
It's nice out there.
We should all know Dan Walter from his years of service into the county. And yeah, exactly. So welcome. Come on up to the podium, big guy.
Short of what's going on in Washington, it's one environment. The general trend in healthcare is going to be about 10 to 12% overall. And as you recall, last year had a pretty catastrophic experience.
Right.
And fortunately, that was mitigated somewhat by the pooling arrangement and the blending of experience rates within Blue Cross. However, your experience this year has gotten rid of some of the catastrophic. The more current the period, the more heavily that gets weighted. Your experience this year is just more traditional. So that's helped greatly.
Excellent. Stephanie, do you want to add something regarding?
No, we were certainly very pleased when the renewals came back because we were not expecting, we were expecting more. We would be lucky to be in the 10 to 12% increase. So 1.2 feels good.
Great to come under budget.
Mr. Dantino.
How are you figuring the rate increase 1.2? You're basing on the same number of employees, same number of families?
Right. We're basing it on if everybody took the same plan that they're currently taking, signed up for that same plan again, that's what the increase would be. So that obviously could change if people switch plans, which they're allowed to do at open enrollment.
So we add or lose employees or something of that nature, the $2
Correct.
Million dollars would be different. And what is our current deductible?
It depends on the plan.
Okay.
Give me 1 second here. Currently, our deductibles are $300 for an individual or three times that for a family under the... That might be... Is that
option? Look at option 2A. I didn't remember.
Well, that's the current option 2A. We keep the deductible same. It's a relatively low deductible. Again, one of the things that I mentioned in my memo... There's only two minimal changes. We're able to keep our exact same plan structure, exact same everything, with the exception that we have removed a $500 cap for in-network benefits, which is a bonus to employees. Now there is no cap for preventative care. Currently that was capped to $500, so if they stay in-network, they can go and get all the preventative care they want. And we removed a $300 supplemental accidental care and replaced that with a $75 copay for the emergency room. So that's kind of a wash. It's not really an increase or a decrease in a benefit, and the other one is certainly an increase in the benefit. So we've tried to keep everything as is, knowing that as volatile and uncertain as the health industry is, if next year Dan comes back to us and tells us we're back to the 14%, we want some room to be able to maneuver our plans.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Brown?
Yes, another question, Ms. Dawkins. I think I remember asking last year, year before, we have about a 50-50 split, don't we, between employees to take one plan and the other?
That's correct.
So it's not likely to affect things much in either
direction.
Well,
actually, we have three plans. So it's about a 50-50 split if you just take the PPO and the both HMOs together. We have two separate HMO plans. The basic difference between those is the doctor availability. Mm-hmm. One's a little bit less expensive.
So there's not liable to be a large swing in either direction.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty well split.
We've
down
been
the
pretty consistent.
Is this normal in the business? Do you find that people are sort of half split between PPOs and HMOs?
Yeah, depends upon the area, but in Fox Valley, for example, or Metropolitan Chicago, you're going to see, and depending upon contribution or plan design arrangements, you're going to tend to see a little bit more on the PPO side. Yours, I think, is about 53-54%.
Thank you.
One more question.
Sure.
The city's cost versus the employee's cost, what is the percentage? That $2 million is the total cost?
That's the total cost. The city covers 90% of single plans.
Single.
And then they cover 80%. Well, it's a little bit more than 80%. It's about 83% of family. We take 80% plus whatever they pay for a single contribution and add those, and that's what they contribute for a family.
Okay.
So roughly the increase to the city is about $24,000, if my math was correct while I was sitting up here. And then I will also add the state enacted a new law that went into effect, I think, in July, but it doesn't go into effect until a new plan year kicks in, and that's where dependents are covered to the age of 26. They don't have to be a full-time student. They don't have to be. They just have to be a dependent.
There's some burden of proof on that, though, don't they have to?
It's nope. Actually removed the burden of proof. It was one of the former governor's last acts. Didn't pass a whole lot of muster on the floor, but it expanded the dependent age eligibility to age 26, removed the student status. They no longer have to be living at home. They no longer have to be your tax dependent, so I'm not sure why they use the word dependent. And if you're a military veteran, it allows you up till age 30. Actually, I used to be on the advisory board for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and Blagojevich wanted that to be age 30 for eligibility, so 26 was somewhat of a settlement.
Did they reject somebody from that then?
No.
Because I've already heard of a case where Blue Cross wouldn't take somebody, they're like 24 years old, out of college.
If it's in their current plan year, they could reject them. It would only be for renewals.
At the renewal.
It takes effect with plan years beginning or following with your renewal after June 1st. So it will go into effect on the plan anniversary here. So if they tried that now, they could have been declined.
Okay.
Thank you.
Pre-existing.
They also can't be married. So if that person happened to have been married.
No, they were not married.
Okay.
Pre-existing conditions are not taken into account?
That's correct. In fact, there will be a separate 90-day open enrollment period for the city to enact after November 1st to get those people on versus the one that Stephanie referred to either earlier where they can change between plans.
We have a motion and a second. Any other questions for Stephanie or Mr. Walter?
And just to point out, tonight we are looking
back home.
We are looking at medical, dental, and vision plans. I know we focus a lot on the medical, but this also includes our dental and vision renewals.
Questions or comments? We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you, Mr. Walter. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again.
Sorry to keep you so late, man.
Not a problem. We've got a minute work.
Okie dokie. Look at that, folks. Item M, as in my, oh my, we're almost finished. Consider authorization of mayor to sign updated administrative service contract with Delta Dental for enhanced benefits.
So moved. Second.
Motion by Singer, seconded by Mr. Marks. Questions or comments for Ms. Dawkins or gracefully exiting the building, Mr. Walter?
I'll use Alderman Brown's statement. This is essentially housekeeping. They've okay. improved our benefits, and now they want us to just agree to that.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. All in favor, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thanks, Dan. Last item tonight, other than new business, is item N. Consider approval of Jonathan Cohen Productions to film a movie within the city of Geneva on September 15th and 16th, 2009.
Is it about leaf pickup?
Move approval.
Second.
Motion by Hill, seconded by, was it Marks? No, it's not about leaf approval, Mr. Malauder. I'll do the jokes around here. You just focus on taking the heated calls. Questions or comments? This is a movie about lost love, starring Craig Maladra and Ray Pauly. Any questions for Ms. DeVita?
We lost out on that deal.
No, we don't need extras in the movie either, do we, Ellen?
Talk about moving back home again.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor of bringing Hollywood to Geneva, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Great. New business.
I think the residents complain much.
My God, there's only Mrs. Devine in the audience. Any new business tonight, Mrs. Devine?
No, I have a question.
Oh, she's here.
Okay. Anyone from the dais? Mr. Piper.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Very nice. Sound exasperated. This earlier. You know, sometimes you see things that happen and you just think, where's the common sense of people? I was coming through town on Sunday, and I know that we all have ground squirrels in front of our house that like to dig underneath our stoops and whatnot. Some folks like to trap these and move them to other places. Honest to God, I'm driving down 3rd Street. Guy pulls over right in front of the, there's people everywhere and kids, pulls right over on 3rd Street in front of the businesses, opens his trunk, and releases one of these little bastards all in, right on the street. Now,
Craig,
you probably drove past 3 parks before you got here. You think maybe we shouldn't do that kind of thing, as you release an angry, trapped animal around where everyone's walking. So hopefully we can get past that. In fact, it may actually, we may have an ordinance against trapping and moving animals around the city. I don't know, but if we could avoid doing that in the future, I don't think we need to spend any sign money on it, Dan, but maybe that would be great for the folks at home. Thanks.
Pam, have you met Alderman Piper yet? Are you still within your 90-day chance that you want to get...
Hi, Anthony.
Yeah, he's kind of a quiet,
brooding
individual.
Doesn't get upset very often.
I actually caught Sasquatch that day. That turned out to be Piper. I released him under the city council. It was unbelievable.
Tell your mother, and she can take away your TV privileges, so keep it up.
Any other comments for new business?
Mayor.
Mr. Pollack, excuse me.
Thank you, sir. Yesterday, 2 Geneva residents, 2 16-year-olds, competed in the World Junior Triathlon Championship in Australia.
Oh.
And, very pleased to announce that Kevin McDowell of Geneva High School came in 4th. And Mr. Ben Canute came in 35th.
Wow.
So I just wanted to reach out to them and say congratulations, guys. We admire you and quite proud of you. So
that's cool.
Quite an accomplishment. Thank you.
Great. And those guys ran for years and years and years at the Delnor event.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That's pretty cool.
Their families are still involved.
My idea of a triathlon is like 2 glasses of milk and a cookie.
Yeah. It was a cab on an L train.
Any other new business before I find a replacement for the second ward?
So moved.
Sorry.
I'll entertain a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved. So moved.
Second. Mark, seconded by Singer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Microphones are off.